Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. This week we are joined by Lawrence Frank and Evan Turner. Let's go. This episode of the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick is brought to you by SoFi, a new kind of finance company that wants to help you to succeed. Whether you're an NBA player or someone who underhands free throws, we all have to make tough financial decisions. SoFi can help you make smarter ones, like refinancing your student loans, which saves members, on average, $19,000. Pro athlete or not, nobody wants to pay more than they have to. Learn more at SOFI.com. Terms and conditions apply at SoFi.com/legal.
Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. Powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your host, JJ Redick.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Vertical Podcast. I'm JJ Redick. Thank you for listening, and I appreciate your patience. Normally, my podcast comes out on a Monday. I'm a few days late. I vacationed last weekend for my birthday and my wedding anniversary, so I was set to record on Monday, and we had a couple scheduling issues with my originally intentioned guest. But with a lot of stuff going on in the NBA, we have two great guests this week. Lawrence Frank, who was just named the executive vice president of the Los Angeles Clippers front office, and Evan Turner, who just finished his second season with the Boston Celtics and is a free agent. The free agent period begins on July 1st, tomorrow. It's going to be an exciting time for the NBA. It's going to be an even more exciting time for NBA Twitter, which NBA Twitter, if you're not familiar with, it's one of the greatest things ever. Speaking of NBA Twitter, I have to share one story before we get to this week's guests. Last week during the draft, I was grilling out in my backyard with some family members and my son, and my phone rang. And we weren't really paying attention to the draft. I think it was like middle of the first round when my phone rang. And I wasn't really paying attention to Twitter either, so I didn't really know what was going on in the draft. But I looked at my phone, and it said, Doc. Never a good sign when your coach and your GM is calling you in the middle of the first round of the NBA draft. So he got on the phone, and I, hey, Doc, is everything okay? He said, man, your trade value has really plummeted. I had no idea what he was talking about, but he explained to me that there was a fake Mark Stein account on Twitter, Mark Stein, the ESPN reporter, and this fake account had tweeted out that the Memphis Grizzlies had traded Brandon Wright in a first-round pick for me and that I was headed to Memphis. So Doc had a good laugh, and everyone in the room, including Lawrence Frank, had a good laugh about it at my expense. So thank you. I went on my Twitter account and immediately, you know, looked at my mentions, and all these people were saying that I was going to Memphis. Good luck in Memphis. Oh no, the Clippers just traded JJ to Memphis. But it didn't happen. But again, that's one of the great things about NBA Twitter. My advice to everyone, if you follow the NBA on Twitter and you follow writers and you follow players on Twitter, look for the blue check. Always look for the blue check. Do not retweet or reply until you have verified. That's my advice. All right, let's get to this week's guests. We are now joined by Lawrence Frank. Lawrence has been one of my coaches for the last 2 years with the Los Angeles Clippers. Lawrence, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So you are unequivocally one of the biggest supporters of this podcast. I would say you've listened to damn near every episode. Most of the time when I see you running on the treadmill over here in the weight room, you've got your earbuds in your ear and you're actually listening to my podcast. Do you have a favorite episode?
You know, it's hard because I would not want to insult some of the fine guests you've got, and you've gotten some high-level guys, but as I've told you, you are the only person I know who has a podcast that's talked about on national TV in a game that you're not even playing in. So it's a huge compliment to you, not just as a player, but as your podcast ability.
Thank you. You know, it's funny. I was catching up with some mail yesterday, and I got a happy birthday card from my parents. And
happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you, yeah. But my mom said something like, we're just so proud of the man, the husband, and podcaster that you are. I don't know if they were being serious or not, if it was tongue in cheek, but I really appreciated that. You actually, funny story, when I first started the podcast, you attempted to get a guest for me. It was a pretty big name, a guy that you have a relationship with. It was Chris Rock. The only problem was is that he was hosting the Oscars that week, so he was kind of busy.
And a little scheduling conflict, but we're still not going to give up hope. And Chris, if you're listening, you need to be on this show.
I would love to have him on. I think everybody listening would love to hear Chris Rock on this show. News of the day for the Clippers. Are you familiar with a Woj bomb?
Yeah, you know, I grew up with the Woj bomb.
Yeah. So you know about it. So this is news to a lot of people, but for anybody who's been around the practice facility over the last couple of weeks, we're all kind of aware of this, but you will be moving from the bench upstairs to the front office. Your official title is the Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations. Talk a little bit about that move and why you're doing it now.
Yeah, well, for me, is I just made hundreds of players that I've coached so happy because they no longer have to listen to me. So there's great joy in the players community. For the last 4 years, I've always kind of had my eye at some point transitioning into the front office. It's something that I'm very passionate about, being part of a group of building a team. And it was just perfect timing. The opportunity presented itself with Doc and Steve. You have an owner who wants to be best in class in everything he's doing. You have a coach who's also the president of basketball operations, who's all about first class. So it just seemed like the perfect opportunity, the perfect timing, and extremely excited about joining the front office staff.
No, it's definitely exciting. And, you know, if you were going to leave the bench, we're obviously happy to have you upstairs and still with our group. I'm curious in terms of, you know, why you wanted to do this. Was it the schedule, the travel that was wearing on you? Did you want to spend more time with family? Was it a new challenge? Like, what was sort of the reason behind it?
Yeah, you know, I didn't really have an ambition of being a head coach again. I love being an assistant. I love working with you guys. We have a great staff, so I enjoyed that. But it was more just kind of the challenge of learning the other side of the business. And I was lucky. When I was the coach of the Nets, every day I would, at the end of the day, I'd spend with Rod Thorne, and I would just pick his brain.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rod's a guy who's been in the league for, seems like 100 years, maybe a little bit less than that. But just kind of how the league's evolved, and then with all the new dynamics involved. And it's not just from putting together a team player-wise, but also from a sports performance and mental performance and all the different support that you can bring into your organization in order to give your players the best opportunity to have a chance to win a championship. So for me, I'd say it's more passion. Now, the one thing is people, I always used to joke with the people in front office. I'd say, oh, I'd love to have your job. It'd give me so much more flexibility. What I'm really realizing is I was totally in the dark.
Yeah.
As my wife can attest to in New Jersey, she goes, you're even less available now. But ultimately, once I settle into the position, I think over the long term, it does give you a little bit more flexibility. But for me, the primary reason was just being passionate about learning the other side of the business.
Seems like it's a good time to sort of be getting into this position, given where the league's headed. There's such an emphasis now on the technology, the analytics, and by all accounts, we have an owner who's sort of willing to invest in those things. Can you talk a little bit about sort of some of the ideas early on that you and Steve have bounced off each other?
Yeah, without a doubt. Steve's in total agreement. We want to be best in practices. And so whether it's learning from other organizations, whether it's in sports or out of sports, but we want to attract the best. And the first thing is we want to take care of our people first. And that starts with the players, the number one priority. Then it's the people who surround the players. We want to make sure that we're rewarding those A-type people. And if there's certain areas that we only have one foot in and we want to jump totally in, you know, Steve is great because he's totally committed to paying for excellence. And the same thing. And it starts again with the players to then outside. So to me, it's a great opportunity to be part of that process and to be able to say, hey, look, we're going to surround you as a player, right, with the best possible people in their specialty. And so the vision is to build kind of a front office cabinet where you have these experts in different fields in order to support our players to give them every advantage they can have.
Sounds like a collaborative effort. One of the things that has really struck me over the course of the past 2 years in our relationship and being around you is your ability to ask questions. And not many people, I think, understand that that's a strength. And it sounds like Steve, I know because I've been around him enough now, where he asks a ton of questions and wants to know things. But it sounds like that'll be one of your greatest strengths in a front office position.
Yeah, and look, maybe I've been blessed because I have such a low IQ that I have to ask questions because I have no clue half the time.
No, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, well, look, I have a very curious mind, and it's you're always looking to learn. And for me is the opportunity, you know, I pick your brain all the time, our other players' brain as well, because you're just trying to learn. And whether it's learning more about you as a person or you as a, you know, a father, a son, whatever the case may be, it just gives me greater insight in helping me. So that's what I love about this, especially because, look, I just made the jump like a week ago, and it's like drinking water out of a fire hydrant. Yeah. But that's what kind of drives you. It's kind of great to be in the action. But, you know, I have a curious mind. I want to learn, want to grow, and I want to be around people who continuously flood me with information.
You're obviously coming on board to this thing at a pretty important time. The draft was last week. Free agency starts, I guess, tomorrow. And for a Clippers fan or an NBA fan who's listening to this podcast, in a very basic way, can you just sort of explain the specifics of the challenges that the Clippers are facing in free agency in regards to the cap, in regards to sort of who we have under contract, what's available out there? You don't have to talk about specific names, of course, but just in terms of the challenges the Clippers are facing in this free agency period.
Yeah, I think, you know, first with the draft and, you know, just the infrastructure, just with the fans, especially since I'm just making this transition, is we have a great general manager in Dave Wool. So he's like run point with the draft, with free agency, and he's worked the entire year. And, you know, as an organization, you're always looking not just at the present, but the future. And the cap with the explosion, I think there's going to be a new normal, and there's definitely going to be sticker shock. and I think that's, you know, and it's going to be interesting because there's so much money available. It hasn't been like this. Never in the history of the league have so many teams have $10+ million in their cap. So there are players that may get paid $30 million, and a normal fan say $30 million. And I think that's kind of going to be the new reality of it. And then next year, there's even a bigger jump.
Yeah.
So I think it's fascinating because really, regardless of what a player's paid, it's, okay, how much does he impact winning and what value you put on it with us, because we're in a situation where we don't have as much money to spend under the cap as other teams. It will be, we're going to, our number one goal is let's retain our team. We want continuity. Let's bring back the gang. Mm-hmm. We felt if we were healthy that we would have had as good a shot as anyone of competing for a championship. And you know firsthand because of your contributions that if we ever were whole with the group we had, we were a high character group that enjoyed being around each other, that was competitive, that was team first. So that's kind of our mission, is to bring back the group.
And I'd be fine with that. We had a good group, and I would love to have seen what our group could have done at full strength. In regards to the numbers that guys are going to sign for, you mentioned value, and I think in a very simplistic way, the easiest way to explain it would be if the cap last year was 70 and the average center got X percentage of the cap, then you can just multiply that number by 94 this year and 110 next year, I guess, whatever the cap may be, and just kind of plug in those numbers. And that's, generally speaking, a starting point for, say, a starting center or a starting shooting guard. And of course, the maxes are all tied to the cap number as well. So that's a sort of an easy way of explaining it, I guess.
Yeah, and I would think that's, you know, that's going to be the push and pull between, you know, a negotiated contract, because I think especially from an agent standpoint, everything's going to be relative. And yeah. But I think this is that just from doing some due diligence, there's a lot of unknowns, both on the player agent side and the team side, because no one quite knows. I mean, a max player is pretty easy to figure out, yeah. But I think there's going to be a lot. There are a lot of really talented players where I think there's such a wide range. And just talking to people who have done this a long time, normally the range would be, okay, he's a $6 to $8 million player. Never have you ever seen, oh, he's between $6 and $20 million. I mean, that's a pretty wide gap. Yeah. So I think it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah. We're going to move on a little bit now to another news story, not having to do with the NBA, but staying in basketball, and that's the passing of Pat Summitt, the great women's basketball coach at the University of Tennessee. Before I get your thoughts on it, I grew up in Virginia, but I was born in Tennessee. I only started playing basketball because my older twin sister started playing basketball, and I was always a big UT fan and a big Pat Summitt fan. I can remember growing up and watching all those teams in the 90s that were just amazing, and their rivalry with UConn. And it's funny, I read an article or I saw something on SportsCenter, and they said something along the lines of, when you think of the word coach, you know, who pops in your head? And for me, and any player, you obviously think of the favorite coaches you played for. And for me, it's probably Coach K. You know, I think of Coach K when I think of the word coach. But the other person, and it really struck me yesterday, like the other person is Pat Summitt.
Wow.
And she meant so much, not just to the University of Tennessee, but to women's basketball in an amazing transition period in terms of the popularity of the sport. Just an icon, basically. And I know that you had a relationship with her from your time at the University of Tennessee. Can you just talk about that?
Yeah, of course. So I was with Coach Summitt from 1994 to 97. I was an assistant for the men's basketball team. And you said it. She is like a global icon.
Yeah.
And just think about this. From 1976 to 2011, if you played for and you stayed 4 years, you played in at least one Final Four.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unbelievable. And she's like the John Wooden of women's basketball. And I'd say for all your listeners, the article Sally Jenkins wrote in the Washington Post, I believe, yesterday was off the charts. Because Sally's done 3 books with Coach, so they're best friends.
Yeah.
And for her to be able to put it in words, what Coach Summitt, who she was and what she meant, and then she took a letter from a player that Coach Summitt wrote in 1982. It was this player's first game as a Lady Vol. I mean, you just get a glimpse of who she is. And look, I knew her when I was 24 to 27, you know, a little pissant, thinking I knew something.
Yeah.
And the thing that was amazing about her humility. So her program had won championships, multiple championships up to that point. I think she finished with 8. And yet the first thing she did when Kevin O'Neill, the head coach, was hired, she said, Kevin, we'll be second fiddle to you. Now, they were selling out. We had like 15 fans, okay? But she said, you want to practice at 3, we'll practice at 1. You want to practice at 1, we'll practice at 3. She would sit down in her meetings and she would ask questions. So the humility of one of the greatest coaches of all time, it was great, just life lessons. As a young coach, she really helped shape me because no one was more competitive. I think she was the first women's coach that had men practicing against the girls. And, I mean, she would get after her girls. And her coaching, her flexibility, like people maybe on the outside say, oh, she's maybe rigid and you see that fire in her.
Yeah.
Yet, to win one of her championships, they ran the triangle. She had never run the triangle before, but she felt it fit her person. And she would come into her office, and we'd be reading Tex Winter's triple post offense book.
Oh, that's great.
It just the competitiveness and yet the humility, the class. I mean, look, it goes without saying, but just a transcendent person and the impact she's had on so many people. She gave me my first crab bake. I went over out, she had a crab, you know. So an unbelievable human being and someone who, although will be missed, her legacy will live on forever.
You're listening to The Vertical Podcast with J.J. Redick.
Lawrence, hang tight for 1 second. As you know, the NBA just held their draft, and I'm sure a lot of guys are thinking about their careers. After all, the draft is a job fair, and everyone wants the best opportunity that they can get. SoFi helps people save money by refinancing their student loans at lower rates. Members also get perks like one-on-one career coaching. Everybody wants more from their career, NBA or otherwise. Learn more at SOFI.com. Terms and conditions apply at SoFi.com/legal. All right, back to Lawrence. I'm curious, because you've been around a lot of great coaches, iconic coaches. How was your own coaching style influenced by those people? Coach Summit, Coach Knight. Was it one specific thing, or did you just figure out, this is who I am, let me bite a little bit here and there off?
Yeah, I think for me is, look, you're influenced by everyone you're around. And first, you know, just your background. So for me, it always started with my parents and my two brothers. From Coach Knight, I always say I wish I was 45 going back when I was a manager for Coach Knight, because I would have had just so much more depth of knowledge than an 18-year-old. You know, he thought I was a Jersey Shore pimp. But I learned a work ethic. I learned about trustworthiness, reliability, and sincerity. Like, those were like four cornerstones. And the thing from a coaching standpoint that was fascinating to me was his ability to take the hole and break it down. And regardless of who he played, it was just watching a genius go to work. And so that always stuck with me, that take the hole, go to part, back to the hole. And then obviously all my track, Kevin O'Neal is an outstanding defensive coach. And then in the NBA, being around Brian Hill and Lionel Hollins, Byron Scott, the staffs that we had, Doc. And the thing that a lot of times you influence is your staff. Your assistant coaches have such an impact on you. But so in terms of a style, look, I wish I was a quarter of the coach that Coach Knight was. I think if I said that I learned a lot from him, he may sue me, saying, wait a minute, what'd you learn? But I've been impacted by so many people, and most importantly, and as you know, on this level, your players, they have your greatest impact. Yeah. And I've been fortunate to have been around some really, really special guys that's why you love to coach is the relationships and bond you feel with the guys you're coaching with.
Quick story. I may have told you this before, but every time I have an out-of-town guest or a family member who maybe doesn't come out to California all that often, they come to our games. Chelsea has seats like right behind our bench, third row or whatever. And inevitably, after the game, I get this question. Who's the short white guy on the bench that's always standing up and yelling at everyone? And I'm like, it's Lawrence Frank.
Yeah, right? Either that or it's the mascot. Many times I get confused for both. The
feistiness has got to come from somewhere, though.
I was the youngest. I had two older brothers, so I was constantly being beat on. But yeah, you know what's amazing? And this just shows you I have such poor self-awareness. One is I don't realize I stand up all the time. And two is I think like I'm eye level with DJ. Like I didn't realize there's such a size discrepancy. Yeah. And then, you know, once a blue moon, someone would show me a picture and I'm saying, I didn't realize JJ's taller than me. I thought we're the same size. I didn't realize I was this little albino midget that's trying to coach.
So are you saying you're not self-aware enough to admit that you have a little Napoleonic complex?
Well, now this is like therapy. Look, I have a lot of issues, and I don't think you have enough time on your podcast with it. Napoleonic, I don't know. I think I embrace the fact that I'm vertically challenged, although maybe in somewhat of denial.
Well, you're doing something right. We were shorthanded this year, and we still, as the defensive coordinator, so to speak, we had a top five defense this year. So clearly you're doing something right from that standpoint. Obviously, you and I will talk more probably tomorrow. But obviously for all of us, you know, we wish you luck with this new endeavor, and we appreciate the time you give us on the podcast. Thanks, man.
Good. Can I say one last thing?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't want this because your podcast has been on such a high. Don't think like this is like, look, I'm the low point of the podcast, okay? It gets a whole lot better. JJ, this is charity work for JJ, and next podcast will be significantly better with an upgrade from the guest.
It's a big name. This is a guy who led the New Jersey Nets to multiple NBA finals. All right, this is a big name. All right.
Best of luck.
Thanks, so.
It's the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick.
Indochino is reinventing men's fashion. You can customize the details you want, pick your lining, lapels, personal monogram, and more. There's 14 unique measurements that go into making a suit that fits you perfectly. And you can't go wrong with the well-crafted 100% merino wool suit. Also, check out their made-to-measure dress shirts and men's accessories. Made-to-measure suits are now affordable and available to the masses thanks to Indochino. When you look good, you'll feel good, and you'll feel confident. Your look, your way. So here's the deal. The code is JJ, and there's a money-back guarantee. Today, my listeners get any premium suit for just $399. That's up to 50% off at Indochino.com when entering JJ at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. There's no reason not to try your first custom-made suit with a deal this good. And a suit classic from their premium collection will look good, feel good, and last. That's Indochino.com. Use the promo code JJ for any premium suit for just $399 and free shipping. Indochino, your look, your way.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick.
And now we are back. We are now going to be joined by Evan Turner. Evan, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, man.
It's a busy day for you, connecting flights. You just landed in Santa Barbara. I saw you a couple weeks ago up at P3, a performance gym up there in Santa Barbara. I'm assuming you are going back to P3 right now and you're not going on vacation. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm back at P3 just trying to get some workouts in and, you know, be like you a little bit, bro. Get my shot right and stop.
I don't know that P3 is going to help you with that. No offense. Is this the first summer you've worked with P3?
Yeah, it's my first time, actually. I came, you know, when you saw me, it was like my first week there. So it's pretty cool technology. The workouts are pretty cool, too. So it's definitely a great mixture of, you know, routine and also just relaxation of Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara's an incredible place. I've already been up there twice this summer, once for vacation and once, like I said, to go to P3. For any listener who's not familiar with P3, a lot of NBA players, professional athletes, college athletes are using it now. They test you, they assess you, and then they give you sort of a program to address and strengthen your weaknesses. I'm going to guess your vertical jumping ability when they tested you was off the charts.
It was all right. It wasn't too shabby. I kind of surprised myself, but you know, it was definitely better than I thought it'd be.
Which NBA guy told you about P3, or is this coming from your agent? Because for me, Kyle Korver has been trying to get me to go up to Santa Barbara for years, and I finally went up there this summer. Was there somebody that pushed you up there?
Actually, my agent told me about it. I just switched agents, and my agent, Kevin Bradbury, he spoke so highly of it. And, you know, I'm familiar, you know, Joakim Noah, he worked out here. And I heard Kyle Korver kind of got everything started off, and you know, I just went to go check it out, and I was kind of pleased with the results. So, you know, like I said, that mixed in with the technology and the routines they have, and, you know, Santa Barbara, you know, it's not a bad way to go for summer workout.
No doubt, man. It's a great place to spend a few weeks during the summer. All right, we got to address this right away. You and I, and Spencer Hall is involved in this too, but we have this like ongoing joke about your favorite player of all time. And so let me just say, a few years ago, we were in Vegas for the summer meetings, and you and Spencer were talking to my agent, who's also Spencer's agent. And I like walked into the conversation. It was post meeting, and I was like, "Hey guys, what are you doing for dinner?" Blah blah blah. And I left. And then apparently I met up with Spencer later, but apparently when I left, he was like, "Dude, when you left, Evan was like starstruck." And he kept saying, "Dude, that's JJ Redick. That's JJ Redick." You had come up to me like your rookie year during a game and like, "Hey man, big fan." And I was like, "Yeah, all right. Yeah, cool. Whatever, dude." Like, that happens all the time. Is this a real thing, or are you just gassing me a little bit?
Oh, no, it's actually real. So, you know, when I was a kid, when I grew up, I was a North Carolina fan. But, you know, the 2001 Duke team, you know, kind of converted me to be, you know what I'm saying, Duke fan growing up a little bit. So when you came into, you know, Duke and you were obviously doing everything you were doing, No, me and my friends at school, one of my good friends, Jared Loffelman, he went to Brown to play ball. He, like, idolized you and then, like, rubbed off on me a bit. So we always mobbed, like, the, you know what I'm saying, the senior year, the 28 points per game, the whole, you know, ridiculous, you know what I'm saying, college career and stuff. But we always were fans from there. And then when you came up that one day, you know, I told you, like, hey, yeah, big fan from, you know, back in the Duke or whatever. He just walked up and you're talking to us normally. You know, I was a little bit younger. I'm like, man, that's freaking JJ Reddit. That was like, you know what I'm saying, my high school idol. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I get it.
And I wasn't that great of a shooter, you know?
Yeah. No, I get it, man. It's just funny to me because, like, of all the players in the NBA that you would be like, oh, my gosh, it would be me. You know, it's like.
No, I definitely had obviously Kobe and things like that. But
yeah, yeah. Every guy our age is like Kobe. Kobe, oh, my gosh. First time you play against him.
Yeah, you definitely want a few. And I always, you know, when people, you know, Spencer tries to make me, like, feel bad or, you know, scream out, like, hey, what? You know, okay, JJ's cool or whatever, you know. But I'm like, well, at least I'm sticking with the people I've been fans of back in the day. You need some NBA guys, and whoever hits a Nike commercial, that's their favorite player. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, I mean, I try to stick with the guys I grew up watching. You know what I'm saying? So I definitely always appreciated your game growing up. You know what I'm saying?
No, I appreciate that. And in fairness to you, like Spencer, he has gassed this up quite a bit. Over the past three years.
Loves to over-exaggerate everything.
No, he's an antagonizer. It's a fact. He's an antagonizer. So it's a big time for you. We're going to talk about more serious things, but it's a big time for you right now. NBA free agency starts tomorrow. This is most likely going to be one of the most exciting free agency periods ever. And last summer was pretty exciting. 2010 was pretty exciting. The NBA is now like a year-round sport in terms of the news cycle. Maybe August is off, but this year the Olympics are happening, so probably not.
Yeah.
I would assume that you are probably really excited, maybe a little anxious, and hopefully going to be feeling some sense of relief over the next couple of days. Just describe your emotions right now.
Yeah, like you said, I'm definitely excited. You know, I'm kind of... you know, kind of sit on the edge of my seat like everybody else because there's so many trades going on. There's so much that could be done with the new salary cap and things like that. And, you know, the Kevin Durant thing kind of, you know, shakes up certain things for players in my position and things like that to see where he's going to go and things like that. So, you know, right now I'm just, you know, I'm anxious, but it's in a great way, you know. And it's more fun as, you know, not only a player but just as a fan of the game to see how everything's going to unravel. And what teams are going to do what next year, and myself, where I will be at too.
No, I think as a fan of the game, anybody who has a vested interest in the NBA will be watching closely over the next few days. I certainly will. You mentioned Kevin Durant. Is the way the system set up right now, is it unfair to other free agents that they have to sort of wait on the big names? Do you think that's fair?
I mean, I technically don't, you know, fully have an opinion. I definitely can't be. Because I comprehend what it is, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, Kevin Durant, you know, former MVP, you know, scoring champ, you know, former scoring champ and everything like that. I understand why teams are throwing in, you know, everything in the bucket, you know, for him or whatnot and making guys wait. But at the same time, you know, they comprehend the risk, you know what I'm saying? Some guys may not, you know, if they get a deal or whatnot, they may not wait on a team that, you know, is recruiting them. You know, like, for instance, Boston, I'm with the Celtics or whatnot, and, you know, they're also trying to get Kevin Durant. So when it comes down to it, if I somewhat get a better offer, a decent offer, I feel like the best situation for me without hearing what Boston says, you know, that's just a risk they're willing to take, you know?
Yeah, no question. So you're saying that if – because I think most players, and I've talked to a couple of my other friends around the league that are free agents this summer, and you, they've kind of echoed what you're saying, and that's, you know – I may not wait to see what all my options are. If somebody presents me with a good option on day one, even if it's not necessarily my incumbent team, then I'm going to take that option.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I don't know when Kevin said he was going to announce where he's going or whatnot, but, you know, if he pulls, you know, something where he waits 3 weeks in July and everything like that, you know what I'm saying? You know, that's not really ideal for what I would like to do. You know where I'm coming from? So,
no, I understand what you're saying. That's not hold up league business. You know, I'm trying to get my escrow check at some point.
Right. You're not lying about that. Yeah.
So for you then, what are the things that you're kind of looking for? You don't have to mention like teams or anything specifically, but I'm always curious to sort of ask guys this. One of the guys that you know I've talked to in the NBA told me, he's an older player, and he's like, if a team gives me more years, that's going to be the tiebreaker. I want years on this contract. For you, is it your role? Is it fit? Because I know with Boston, you felt like you were going there and it was a good fit, a good role. You took a little bit less money on your last deal. So what is the goal this time around?
Yeah, I think once again, it's all about, the fit and the role that you're going to walk into, mixed in with what the GM, what the coach and things like that has in regards to winning. I was part of the rebuilding era of the 76ers, where they admitted they just wanted to tank. So, I understand how crazy it is if you just go night in and night out, just losing every single game. I'm getting older and, I'm only 27, but I would like to keep trying to contend for playoffs and trying to win something. I'm a competitive individual in that nature. But, obviously I would want security as well, financially and things like that, considering that I did somewhat take a pay cut the past 2 years.
Yeah, you and I have sort of a similar scenario that happened to us your last year in Philly, my last year in Orlando. Both teams were sort of in that rebuild mode. We had been in the playoffs. The rebuild mode happened, so we're on a losing team. Then we got traded at the trade deadline. You went to Indiana. I went to Milwaukee. It was tough to get traded midseason and sort of try to fit in. And then we become free agents 2 months later. Looking back, do you think that trade hurt your market value as a free agent?
No, absolutely. I definitely think so. I think it not only hurt my market value, because obviously every team is going to look for leverage on how they can, somewhat lowball you in a certain sense. And then at the same time, just perception of things. I thought I was, before I left Philly, I thought I was on my way on the up and up to become, a premier wing and everything like that. And, I got traded to Indiana, and, my minutes got cut and everything. I had to somewhat work my way back up and earn a minute, when I got to Boston. I'm coming from? And, no matter what they try to say, like myself and yourself, whether they say he can't do this or he can't do that, we're still being used 30 minutes a game down crunch time.
Right.
And so when it comes down to it, it's like I definitely comprehend for that month period, that 2 month period where you guys use the leverage, but at the same time, when it comes to winning, it comes to things that matter. Sometimes you look back on things and you're like, hey, this doesn't really add up to it, right.
I know exactly what you're saying, and
yeah,
it seems to me that you are much better positioned, given the last couple years in Boston and how you finished the season this year, and also that you were on a winning team and a team that was in the playoffs. I want to ask you about your time in Boston. By all accounts, I'm an avid reader of Hoops Hype. By all accounts, it seems like that was a very positive experience. And it was although maybe you had to take a step back in terms of, your role, it seemed like it was a step forward in your career and your development. And I'm wondering if that's accurate.
No, that's definitely most, 100% accurate. I think, I had some of the most fun I had playing basketball since I hit the NBA. We had a great locker room. I think Boston was definitely a first-class organization, and Brad Stevens definitely did a lot for my career and my maturity. I think at one point going to Boston after everything happened, the trade deadline and, not being sure where I could sign to and things like that, I wasn't even sure if I wanted to, continue playing. You know where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
And then Boston kind of brought back, the excitement for me. You know what I'm saying? Playing at the Garden every night was crazy. As opposed to where I played in the past, you might show up and fans just might boo you or root for the other team, And that whole 2 years in Boston was magical, and it definitely helped me a lot in regards to being a professional and a person and, kind of adapting to the bigger picture situations that you need to have in regards to being in the NBA. So it's definitely been positive for me, and it's definitely revamped my career and definitely put me in a position I am now to look forward to July.
I get the sort of rediscovering your joy and love of the game and a great locker room and playing for a great coach and how all those things can sort of affect your play on the court. I'm curious, though, if you know, there was a sense of burden being the number two pick in Philadelphia. And if that had to do at all with sort of that mindset, and if there wasn't that burden in Boston, it was that a sort of a positive in terms of your growth?
I think it's a little bit of both. No, I was excited to be the number two pick and things like that. And I was excited to play on those first two teams and learn how one of my great friends, Andre Iguodala, and things like that. There's a lot that comes with being number two pick. And, you know, I think Andre also recognizes, too, with the publicity and attention you get. You know, Philadelphia is a tough city. So, you know, when it came down to certain things and things like that, sometimes it was always erred on the side of being negative as opposed to being positive, you know. And Chauncey Billups said, the NBA is all about perception. And, you know, when you're growing up and you go from being just in college and being sheltered to going into the pro sport life and everybody can kind of, you know, pick at you or do whatever, you have to be strong enough to kind of block it out. So, you know, when it came down to it, just, you know, it's just my last couple of years in Philly were just dark days. The negativity and stuff like that wasn't something I was really used to. And, you know, you get traded from there. And then, you go to Indiana and things don't work out the way it's supposed to go. You know, it's kind of tough, you know, a tough couple of years. And considering the fact that, you know, I would wake up at 6 a.m. every offseason and work out till noon, you know what I'm saying? So the add up of it was kind of leaving me to try to comprehend, you know, where I go from here, or how can I switch up and change things and stuff, and, you know, trying to figure out what I could do differently to, you know, kind of have a positive response. But the number two pick never really did anything for me in regards to my mind. I just think more people remember it than I do. You know what I'm saying? Even when I do things nowadays, like the former number two pick, and it's like, all right, cool, that was 6 years ago. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people try to judge that, or, you know, try to somewhat, you know, once again, compare me to whatever, but I just wanted to compare to who I was and how I'm progressing each year, you know? I think the number two pick often overshadows the things I've accomplished and things I overcome.
I think that's really fair, and I think that's a really, like, honestly, it's a really healthy mindset to have, because there is, you know, when you're a top pick, especially if you're, you know, one, two, or three, there is an extra layer of expectation that comes with that. And an extra layer of scrutiny if, whether it's right or wrong, you don't live up to other people's expectations. And we all know, if you're a sports fan, you know Philly's a tough sports town. It is.
You're not lying.
They have great fans. They have a great media, but it can be tough at times. There's no question. I want to ask you, though, then, if you never really saw yourself in terms of having that burden of a number two pick, you're going into this free agency period, what do you view yourself as a player now? Like, what's your view on yourself? Like, do you think you can be a superstar? Do you think you could be an all-star? Do you think, oh no, I'm a great rotation? Like, where does that stand?
I think when people break things down, stuff like that, I just think of myself as just being, you know, all around impactful basketball player. I think, like, once again, I don't say this to knock anybody or anything like that, but NBA is so perception-based and so perception-driven and things like that. It's like, in my opinion, certain things and certain accolades that come along with, like, whether it be an all-star or superstar or, you know, things like that, is buzz. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times, like you and I both know, some people ask me, yo, is this dude hard to guard, or this guy this good or that good? And it's like, they're okay, but there's tons of guys out there that don't get enough credit as they should. You know where I'm coming from? So where I focus on myself is, I think I could be an impactful all-around player that can fill a stat sheet and, you know, damn near go for a triple-double every night. So whether that means, you know what I'm saying, all-star or whatnot, or a six-man candidate or whatever that is, I just see myself as headed towards being a great basketball player that can positively impact the game and help you win, you know.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick.
How would you like to get 3 home-cooked meals for free? Well, all you have to do is remember these 2 letters, JJ. That's easy enough, right? Now keep listening, and I'll tell you how to get those free meals. Look, we all know there's nothing better than a great home-cooked meal, and no one makes it easier for you to do that than Blue Apron. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their suppliers and only bring you the best ingredients, all right to your door. Now comes that part about the three free meals I was telling you about. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/JJ. Think about it. That's three meals for free just by adding my name. Once again, that's blueapron.com/JJ. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, let's get back to Evan. I know this for anyone listening to this podcast and hearing you talk for the first time. I think it's apparent that you're wired a little bit differently and the sort of adverse to labels, which is pretty awesome. But I'm going to give you a label right now, and we're going to do this week's 4-on-4. I'm going to call you quirky. Spencer used some other words to label you, but I'm going to call you quirky, okay? That's all I'm going to say. I think you're a quirky guy, all right? So for this week's 4-on-4, so at the end of every podcast, we do four things, you know, whatever. It could be random. I could ask you, you know, four implications of, you know, Great Britain leaving the Eurozone, but I'm not going to ask you that. This week's 4-on-4 is going to be four weird things about Evan Turner. And I'm going to give you one. You can correct me. We don't have to use this for one, but I'm going to give you one. Pitch Perfect is your favorite movie.
I definitely enjoy Pitch Perfect. I think like my second year in the league, me and Drew Holiday were obsessed with it. And Spencer probably told you this because whenever me and Drew had something going on, Spencer always wanted to hop in and be involved in it. But Spencer also probably didn't tell you he bought the soundtrack. So,
oh, man.
It's one of my favorite movies of, like, 2012. But, like, my favorite movie ever is probably, like, 8 Mile.
Okay, 8 Mile. All right, so that's one weird. I don't necessarily think that's a weird thing, but that's one thing people may not know about Evan Turner, that 8 Mile is his favorite movie. I need three more, though.
Yeah. Let me see. People don't know. I keep buying guitars. So I always wanted to learn to play the acoustic guitar John Mayer. That's a pretty low-key thing I don't think people know.
Hold on a second. Back up for a second. You keep on buying acoustic guitars? Like, how many guitars do you have now?
I have three, and I plan on learning, and then I'll go for a few weeks, and then the summertime just hits, and I'm busy working out, you know what I'm saying? And then that's all I can really think of.
Spencer told me that you have an interesting taste in music. Is this accurate?
Yeah, no, I listen to everything.
Like, what is everything? Like, trap music or Diplo or alt-rock? Like, what is everything?
No, I don't do EDM. But, you know, I listen to everything. I don't listen to trap as much as I do old-school hip-hop. But, you know, like I said, I like John Mayer. I was a decent fan of, you know, growing up. You know, back in the pop music stages, you know, Justin Timberlake had a great album back in the day. You know, one of my favorite rappers ever is, like, Common and Lupe. Like, you know what I'm saying? I listen to tons of different stuff, you know, Adele, all that stuff.
Okay. I that's fine. Are you a Taylor Swift fan? I don't know why I just thought of this, but Taylor Swift is like, that's my guilty pleasure. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, no, she made a couple of good songs. I never went out and bought one of her albums. So I can't say I have. No.
All right, I'm going to let you off the hook easy this time. You don't have to give me a fourth one.
I don't know. I mean, I'm weird.
Maybe you're not as quirky as we thought you were.
Yeah, I can't really think of anything off the top of my head. But I mean, if you're around, maybe we'll figure it out. But, yeah, I can't.
All right, if you think of something, text me later. I'll probably see you at some point this summer up in Santa Barbara. For all of us listeners, myself included, best of luck in free agency. I hope you get an awesome deal. I told you that a couple weeks ago, but I really do. You deserve it.
Thanks, JJ.
All right, man.
Appreciate you, bro, man. Be safe.
Always. Appreciate you, bud.
All right.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. I'd like to thank today's guests, Lawrence Frank and Evan Turner. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast. Please tweet me at JJ Redick for any questions and comments. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, SoFi, Indochino, and Blue Apron. Be sure to support them the way they support us. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.